Fall, spring, we're not really sure right now. We're looking for answers, and it seems that all we continue to find are questions in the world of college football.
Everybody wants the call to be football in the fall.
All right, there we go. We're back on the rhyme train. How do you feel about that one?
Come on, Cliff. That was a pretty good one.
You're not going to get it.
Cliff, seriously, you have to be a little more unbiased. You are so biased against anything I say. I need you to have more of an open mind. I thought that was a pretty good one.
I'm a tough grader, man. You got to come harder than that.
Tough grader. You're an unfair grader. You're a teacher that I would despise.
Weak bar so far this morning here on Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Going to talk to Joe Castiglione, the athletic director of Oklahoma, coming up here because we heard Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick yesterday. He talked to our own Heather Dinich about the idea and his desire to see the college football season start pushed back a little bit here. Says the sweet spot in his mind is between 8 and 10 games. Give them a chance to amass more information as players start to put pads on and really start doing football activities here in the next couple of weeks and as students return to campus. So all important information that they're trying to gather there from the athletic director and certainly from the conference commissioner's side of things. And we'll talk to one of the other prominent athletic directors in college athletics, whose coach, I mean, listen, what we heard from Lincoln Riley has been probably the most open proponent of let's wait on
something. Keep everything on the table.
Talking about the spring season, keeping it all there.
Keep all on the table. But what we don't know of the Power Five, we don't know where the SEC, where the ACC, and the Big 12 are headed. So hopefully we'll get some answers to that. Are they all working in conjunction together, or are they all just waiting to the last possible moment? You start to put it, supposed to start really getting after it in August. So you got to think next week needs to be that time where the decision has to be made on this. Is this going to be late? Are we on schedule? How are we going to play?
Yep. So hopefully, Oklahoma's athletic director will join us in about 20 minutes as we hope to get some of those answers looking towards college football season. And we will give you another one of our NBA status updates as we give you Cliff Notes to get prepared for life inside the NBA bubble as the scrimmages start July 22nd. Start today and go through the 28th. Each team will get 3 inter-squad scrimmages before the actual season resumes on July 30th. But in this time period, we've talked so much college and how it relates to the NFL, what they're willing to do in all of this. The one thing that anyone will have to look as it relates to the NFL is the Kansas City Chiefs. They are the center of the NFL universe right now. Patrick Mahomes signs his monster deal this offseason. Chris Jones not far behind. And Chris Jones came out and did the thing.
Oh, boy.
Came out and did the thing in all this. He joined KCSP 610 Sports Radio on Monday and said, "This is just the beginning. We plan to have another parade and another parade and another parade. We're going to make sure we bring not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5+ rings to Kansas City. It's been 50 years of waiting, and the wait is over now. It's time to create a dynasty."
Doesn't it sound like another guy who said something back in 2010?
Three kings came down here to win championships. Absolutely. Not one, championships.
Not two.
LeBron, tell us about that.
Not two, not three. Not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Chris.
Hey,
Chris.
Listen, you know what? I admire it.
Dude is one hell of a player and got rewarded with an incredible contract that he deserves. But, man, when players start, it is so hard to get there, first of all. Look what stopped them the year before. They had a great year, and a guy lining up offsides may have cost them a trip to the Super Bowl, but you didn't go. It is so hard to get there, to start listing off the number that you're going to win, man. It's just something, a road I'm just amazed people still want to go down.
That's the level of confidence that a team that returns as much firepower as them rolls into a shortened season with, or a potentially shortened season, at the very least. A shortened offseason in training camp in a lot of this one. You can hardly blame them for feeling confident.
Well, no, I don't feel confident. But again, in something that's so hard to do I don't know. Again, it means nothing. But let me just tell you about something that will come back to haunt you at some point. Now, LeBron is a little bit of a higher figure than Chris Jones is, so this gets used against LeBron at certain times. I doubt people, if they don't win 4, 5, or 6, that 10 years from now we're pulling out this, Chris Jones quote. I highly doubt that.
I would like to be good enough at anything to not care when I say something like that, though, because that is a luxury that comes with being great at what you do. And Chris Jones just got paid like he's great.
Yes, he did.
Great. he certainly performed like it. But when you look around, this is also the benefit of kind of what Jason Fitz always talks about. When you roll up to the bar with the big group of big bad guys, you feel pretty emboldened to say some wild stuff. I have to imagine that's what it feels like being on the team with Patrick Mahomes.
Well, you do. Again, 20 of 22 starters back on that Super Bowl team, and we could break it down even more like we have. But the bottom line is you had the best player in the league, Patrick Mahomes, you know, signed for a bunch of years. You got a bunch of players back. They should be the prohibitive favorite to go back and repeat. But as we know, this game is very, very difficult to do that.
Someone who echoes your hesitance in all of this is Jeff Saturday, our own ESPN NFL analyst and Super Bowl champion, who says he needs to recognize how lucky they are to be here.
The Chiefs came back in the playoffs so many times. It's remarkable. It's crazy. But to do that repeatedly, again, becomes tougher and tougher. So I respect him. I'm happy for his contract, all those things. Be careful guaranteeing the rings, man. Let's slow it down. Pump the brakes a little bit. A little more concern. Let's slow it down and be happy with what we got and go try to get that next.
Now, listen, I agree with that. But again, I've never been A, that good a player, and B, on a team that is coming off a Super Bowl and very close to being in two Super Bowls. I was on some great defensive teams in Philadelphia, but we never got close to the Super Bowl. And as I said, I was never near that caliber of player. So I can't even put myself in that position. All I can do is be in the position I was, where I couldn't even imagine saying something like that.
Yeah, and I understand Jeff's point to an extent, but this is the interesting thing about the Chiefs and all this, because obviously everyone sees it relative to the Patriots dynasty. We all look and we all say, whoa, going to 9 Super Bowls over that time span and being able to win 6 of them is insane, and no one should expect to do that. I understand that. But when I look at this and the specific criticism of how close it was, there were plenty of close calls in that Patriots run too. But But they were always close, right? Like, you pay for proximity to the ultimate prize in this. And for the Chiefs, when we look at, they had all those comebacks in those big time games down that playoff run. At some point, if you can do it consistently enough, and that's what will be interesting about this season, is if they can keep that up. At some point, if you erase leads consistently enough, isn't that just because it's another tool in your belt?
Because you're that good, and you can do it.
It's Golden State Warriors-esque, and I keep coming back to that as the comp for this team. I understand it's a different sport, but Golden State's ability, because of their overwhelming offensive firepower, and certainly Golden State was a better defensive team than they'll probably ever get credit for in history, but a great defensive team, but one that could overwhelm you so much offensively that we talked about. No lead was ever safe. That is the Chiefs' offense. That is their ability on there.
And that is the Chiefs' team, because you mentioned Golden State. A number of players, you know, from Draymond Green to when Kevin Durant joined to the Splash Brothers. So you have Mahomes, you know, as the best quarterback. You have Chris Jones as one of the best interior tackles, defensive tackles. You have Mitchell Schwartz, the best right tackle in the game. Travis Kelce, arguably the best tight end of the game. Tyreek Hill, you know, one of the best, you know, over-the-top receivers in the game. So you have that star power filled in by a lot of other really, really good players to keep this thing going for a while.
Important note, if you're building the Chiefs' big three for this LeBron and Miami Heat conversation, is it Chris Jones, Patrick Mahomes, and who? Is it Kelce or Hill?
I'd go Kelce.
Yeah?
I would probably say Kelce.
I think when you look at what teams have traditionally done,
surprised you didn't go with Mitchell Schwartz.
Hey, listen, I think Mitchell, like, forget even right tackle. He's one of the best tackles in football.
Without question, right. Where's your O-line love?
I understand that. That's coming later, believe me. I get to take over Trey's top three list today. And let's just say it's going to look a little beefier than you all expect in a lot of this one. So more to look at on that one later. But when you look at what teams have actually done to be able to slow down the Chiefs' offense at times, it generally tends to be disrupting the tight end and disrupting Travis Kelce in a lot of this. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Now, Patrick Mahomes obviously has an MVP from 2 years ago. Lamar Jackson, your reigning MVP. But any conversation about where it's going to start going into next year probably begins and ends with Patrick Mahomes in a lot of this. Don't tell that to Bill Barnwell.
No, do not.
Because Bill Barnwell has an article on ESPN.com right now titled 260 players who could win the 2020 NFL MVP.
260 players of basically the 1,800 players in the league that can win the MVP.
And now he breaks it down in some interesting sections in all this one. Hall of Fame quarterbacks, quarterbacks on a rookie deal, established quarterbacks, middling quarterbacks, literally any quarterbacks. Basically, if you're a quarterback, you have a chance to win
well,
the MVP.
Kind of like the Heisman.
As well as big-time running backs, star wideouts, and elite pass rushers in all this one. And kickers, which is an interesting caveat we'll get to in a little bit here. But as you look through this now, Dad, because it's worth noting, Lamar Jackson was not an MVP favorite going into last season.
No, he was not.
And yet he's the one that walks away with the trophy. So is there anyone outside of that range that you look at going into the season with a shot?
Well, again, his top five candidates are Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and Ben Roethlisberger. Now, Ben coming off the injury, I think would be the fifth. Maybe Aaron Rodgers because he has no weapons.
Of the Hall of Fame quarterbacks in this debate, which is great that Bill understands the show enough to put Patrick Mahomes already in that category.
Yeah, I mean, without question. I know a lot of people are looking at Kyler Murray. I don't think Kyler Murray is winning the MVP because what's one thing associated with winning the MVP? Your team has to be, and we saw, now Baltimore probably underachieved, you know, in the playoffs, but they were there, and a lot of people thought one of the better teams. I just don't see the Cardinals making that big of a jump to be, you know, A, in the playoffs, or B, making noise in the playoffs just yet. I certainly think they can get there. Don't get me wrong. I think this team is on the rise, but I don't think to the point where they're going to be good enough to where Kyler Murray's, unless he has stats that unbelievably separate him from anybody else, kind of like where Lamar went a little bit with his rushing and touchdown passes and such. You know, if Kyler Murray gets in that realm, I just don't see Kyler doing it. I see it being more along the lines of one of these favorites.
Yeah, and
I know he's kind of that sexy pick because I really think he can make another nice jump, but we all know how well the team does as part of this, right?
If that's a team that makes the playoff, is that enough for him to win? If they make the playoffs behind a performance for him, because again, he joined Cam Newton as a rookie, as the only rookies in NFL history with over 3,500 yards passing and 500 yards rushing.
I think if they make the playoffs, he's put himself right in the conversation, yes. In that division with the returning Super Bowl team in San Francisco, always a tough team in Seattle. Again, I'm not sure what we're going to get out of the Rams. We'll see. But if he takes him to the playoffs in that division, yes, I think he's right up there for it.
I think understandably so. What's going to get interesting is if you look in that division here, because we're talking about the Hall of Famers at the top of this one, and Drew Brees is a guy that's certainly in the Hall of Fame, and Drew Brees is a guy that we've looked at every year for the last run of years and said should be right in the running of this. His team is always in a position to be the best, if not one of the best, in the NFC, and then doesn't manage to capture it. Russell Wilson's always going to be really interesting in this one.
How's the guy never gotten a vote?
He's never gotten a vote. Is disgusting.
Yeah, I agree.
In all of this. And the problem is, I keep waiting for the Seahawks to actually do things with that offense that put him in a position to go out there and showcase that ability. It's been, you know, a offense that, especially with Brian Schottenheimer at the helm, has led heavily on the run game in a lot of this in ways that don't put the ball in his hands nearly enough to do this. But Russell Wilson's the one I'd like to speak into existence, because you look at a guy like him who's done so much for so long in this, Matthew Stafford with the Lions, who threw 8 games, and I saw our colleague Dan Orlovsky was going back and watching those games before Stafford got hurt and said he was the best quarterback in football.
Stafford was playing incredibly well.
The problem, again, is that team tends to undermine his efforts.
And that's what happened. So that you know, that's why you sit there and talk about the MVP, and I hate the argument, take them off the team, how good are they? You can do that with any star in a team. They're not going to be as good as they are if you want to start getting into degrees. I just don't like that. So it's MVP to me is who's the best player on one of the best teams, right? That's how it goes. But I guess along those lines, it's like, well, okay, that's what you need. You need one of the best players leading your team somewhere. That's why I think – because you know my thought on the Heisman, and even sometimes with this MVP, it goes to a quarterback, right? I mean, blah, blah, blah. It's a quarterback award. Great. So I like to figure out who's the first non-quarterback that would have the best chance to win the MVP. And a lot of people go to Christian McCaffrey because of what he's done. That team's not going to be good enough, right? Unless he goes bonkers with stats that you just go, okay, you can't deny this guy. He's going to be on a team that's not going to be in the playoffs. This is a rebuilding team. They just are. I mean, for what
he went for 1,000 and 1,000 last year. If that's not enough to get you, and he was in the conversation.
He was in the conversation, but I don't think there was a serious thought to make him the MVP when you could arguably say this guy is an unbelievable, valuable player. But because that team is not going to be very good, he's not going to win it. So who does it go to? Does it go to a guy like Michael Thomas, who just gets thrown to all the time and has God breaks record for receptions? And if New Orleans makes it you know, to the Super Bowl. But if that happens, Drew Brees probably has ungodly numbers.
I was just going to say it's never going to work like that for him.
No, I know.
It's not a situation like where in the 49ers, if they had won the Super Bowl, obviously Nick Bosa was probably going to be your MVP in that. But if it was going to go to a player on offense, it wasn't going to be Jimmy Garoppolo because we already had our minds made up about what his importance was
exactly
to that
team. It's exactly right.
Versus what are wide receivers. If it's going to go to a non-quarterback, it's going to go to Aaron Donald. Like, he's going to be the only one whose team could be in proximity because we know the Rams have been good and had a Super Bowl appearance. We can legitimately look at that team and say he is the best player on that team, bar none, in that situation. And he's a guy with an overwhelming amount of stats to put it up with. I know Bill Barnwell talked about him in his article. Quarterback knockdowns are a great predictor of sacks and just being around that situation. I think Aaron Donald in the last, you know, since he's been in the league, has about 14 more than anybody else in this situation. So if it's going to a non-quarterback, it's going to end up going to Aaron Donald because he's got the best chance of being unequivocally the best at what he does and on a team that could make the postseason.
And do we know the last, and I'm quickly going over in my head, I can't, the last defensive player?
Lawrence Taylor.
1986.
So let's stick with that because there's one other point, and then we've got our NBA status update that I want to get to on here that's relevant to this current NFL season that I didn't remember, and I don't claim to be someone with the depth of NFL experience that you or Trey bring to the table just because I haven't been doing this as long. But Bill mentioned in this article, he threw in there for funsies, kickers. Because in 1982, Washington kicker Mark Mosley beat Dan Fouts out for the MVP in AC. And to me, while that's insane that a kicker won the MVP for a lot of reasons that Bill documents, even going to a piece that he wrote back in the Grantland days, it's interesting to note what happened in that season relative to this season, right?
Right.
Because that was a season that wasn't, it was strike shortened, but it was strike shortened in the way that this NBA season is shortened, meaning that came in the middle. Right? Because Uncle Bob was a part of that.
Yes, yes. My brother Bob was part of that 82 strike, yes.
So the 82 strike that started in week two and ended up being a nine-week break, essentially a nine-week break in the middle of the NFL season. And it wasn't like the ones that we saw later that you were a part of where there were replacement players
87,
playing.
We had the four games were out, but they had replacement players, so they kept going, yes.
Yes, this was a break in there that ended up shortening the season to nine games in the middle. You took off starting in week two when the players struck, and that went to about week 11 in all of that. And they were able to come back and finish.
Yes,
I looked
were.
At that and said, oh, okay, so we've done this before. It's not unprecedented for an NFL season if it should come to that. Lord knows
we
hope
don't
that's
want
not
it
the
to.
Case.
Yeah.
But as you look around for that, and these professional leagues are so differently equipped to handle this than the college leagues, I looked at that and went, all right, if worst case scenario, and we have to err on the side of caution, which you hope that's the only reason it would be a response, at the very least, the NFL's proven in the past it's able to do
It's able to do it. It's exactly right. And a quick note on the MVP. We talk about if Cardinals make it to the playoffs. Remember, that's as far as it can go because the MVP is a regular season award. So you have to look at how good that team is. So if the Cardinals, if say we get a full slate in and they make the playoffs and they're 9-7.
And they're the expanded playoffs.
They're the last team in or something like that. I don't think his chances would be very good then. Even though he's lifted this team to the playoffs, which I think he is eventually going to do.
And I think I would say statistically if that happens, if it's anything like last year and he can improve on those numbers that were gaudy relative to a rookie, going to be very interesting. Got to keep him upright for that to happen. All right, as we mentioned, we got the NBA bubble getting back and getting ready to go live. Scrimmages are starting today before games start on the 30th. And so we got the cliff notes for all the NBA teams that are getting ready to enter the bubble. We gave you the Nets in our NBA status update earlier. Now, let's get you caught up on what's going with the Washington Wizards.
Golic and Wingo, NBA status update. Washington Wizards.
I'm Trace Hughes, and I cover the Wizards for NBC Sports Washington. The Wizards are going to look very different in Disney World than the team we last saw in March. There will be no Bradley Beal, no Davis Bertans, and of course, no John Wall. They are only 24-40 on the year and will now be without several of their best players. So with those guys out, look for Rui Hachimura and Troy Brown Jr. to lead the way. They are the team's two most recent first-round picks, and Hachimura in particular has been impressive so far. He's had an all-rookie season. Hachimura and Brown need to help the Wizards replace the 46 points Beal and Bertans combined average. Also look for Thomas Bryant and Mo Wagner to step into prominent roles. As per expectations, their goal is to make the play-in tournament. They are 9th in the East and 5.5 games back from 8, which means they need to get 2 games closer to qualify. I think the safe bet is that they fall short without Beal in the mix, and honestly, that could be for the best because it would preserve their spot in the draft lottery.
I think that is key because remember, while they're 5.5 away from Orlando, who is sitting in the 8th slot right now, there is that play-in potential if I believe they get it within four games. So it's only a couple of games they would have to pick up on Orlando, but you just heard all the players that are missing. I mean, this is just a wait for their season to be over. If they're fortunate enough to get into the play-in, I don't think I would have a lot of confidence that they'd be able to do anything with it.
It's also a reminder of where your goals line up in a lot of this, because they mentioned the lottery in there, right, and preserving your position in that. And this is the difficult prospect, is you've been invited to the party now. This is kind of why the NBA wanted that play-in option for normal basketball life to begin with, to try and point the arrow upward so teams would be less inclined to tank and more inclined to want to try and get into the playoffs.
Well, you can pull off tanking pretty easily right now. You can just say, listen, look at the players we don't have here, man. And so this is what it is. We're in the lottery.
Great note from our researcher, Vic, on this. Rui Hachimura, who's third on the team in scoring average, has struggled with the outside shot. According to Second Spectrum, which I know you love, he's 208th. In effective field goal percentage on jumpers among the 216 players with at least 150 attempts.
So that's not good.
Not great, Bob. Not great in all this one. So, again, another great status update there. We'll have one more for you guys as we go along in this one. Thanks to Chase Hughes from NBC Sports Washington helping us out with that one, getting you guys ready for this. But coming up next, is the college football season coming any sooner? College football has a lot of questions coming its way, and after hearing from Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick, we have a lot more. We are searching for answers, though, here on Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Mike Golic Jr. with you here this morning. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line, and to try and get some answers in that vein on what some of the biggest movers and shakers in the world of college athletics are doing. We're delighted to be joined by Oklahoma Athletic Director Joe Castiglione with us here on Golic and Wingo. Joe, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. And I want to say a special hello to your father. Great to be on with him again. It's been a while since my basketball committee days and your sheets of integrity. But I want to congratulate you on all you've done for morning radio and look forward to seeing you along the way, hopefully during the college football season.
I would love that. Joe, I appreciate that very much. And yes, after this, I will be calling college football games and hoping there's college football games to call. And that's why we have you on, yeah, Joe.
Exactly. And Joe, I think that's kind of what we're looking at here. We heard on Tuesday from Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick, who said he would like to see the start of the college football season push back. Where are you on that? Would you agree with that sentiment?
I have to say that I'm keeping an open mind on everything, because anything is possible, as we know. There's a lot we don't know, and that's what's obviously driving the conversation. Some people want to know now. Some people want to know how it's going to look. And I know we're getting close to the time where a decision has to be made. We've already proven that we can stop quickly. It wasn't comfortable. It was awkward and obviously very disappointing for student athletes who lost out on playing in the NCAA tournaments or NCAA play, or only got a third of the way through their season in the spring. But we're focused on trying to find the safest, healthiest way to put our players in a position to play the game they love. We hope we get that opportunity, but we have to remain open to continuing to listen to the science and the medical experts as we let them guide our decisions.
And those decisions, as you said, at some point have to be made. And we're getting to the point, I'm sure everybody has an itinerary and a schedule on when you're going on the field, when you put pads on, when you can really start hitting out there. So when for you is that decision on, is the next step going to happen or is the next step going to be delayed?
Mike, I'll just tell you, we have modeled so many different options to this point. Even if we go through the next week or two and make a decision about the season, there's no guarantee we're going to get through the season without some level of disruption. I think if anything, the planning for flexibility has to be there. We may have teams that get more games in than others. We have to be able to figure out how that's going to determine those that play in a conference championship. Obviously, what happens if we do have a postseason. So I'm just actually trying to do everything we can to get our players to the OTAs and then the padded practices and then see how that goes, and try to obviously pay attention to all the circumstances around the virus, you know, in our state, other states, listening to health departments, our college presidents, the commissioners that are obviously talking about this daily. So we're, I know people want a final answer or want a date certain. And right now, today, at least today, is not the day to make the decision.
Joe Castiglione with us, Oklahoma's athletic director here on Golic and Wingo. And Joe, you mentioned the commissioners and all of this. We know the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have decided to go conference only in this. How much collaboration or conversation is there amongst the other Power Fives involved in this? You guys in the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC.
A lot. And I had, like a lot of others, had hoped that maybe we would make our decisions collectively, that we respect other conferences for making decisions they feel in their best interests. I know whether it's the commissioners continuing to collaborate, whether it's ADs that talk to each other. I know I speak to many of my colleagues throughout a week and have actually going back to mid-March when we all entered the lockdown, if you will, trying to share what we learned, hear what they've learned, and try to collectively figure out the best way to go forward. You know, we're going to compete on the field, that's true, but in this particular case, the more we can collaborate, the more we share information and understand, you know, the surge of a virus might be different in some states than it is in others. Availability of testing might be different in some states or areas than it is in others. The ability to get testing results might take longer in some places than it does in other places. So we have all these variables that we're working through, but the collaboration itself has been fantastic. And I think in the end, a good number of us are going to work together to make whatever decision we make itself the best for the people we represent.
Joe, one of the other things Jack Swarbrick said is everything going fine with testing and athletes being there and doing the workout. But then soon, there are going to be students that are going to be coming on to campus to kind of add another layer to this whole thing. And I know for Notre Dame, they're starting earlier, August 10th classes, August 1st students start to come on campus. How about at Oklahoma? Do we know what's going on as far as when students, if there are going to be students or how many are coming or when they're coming back on campus?
Yes, fair point. Our students are coming back towards the end of August. They'll probably start moving in the residence halls, maybe the 17th to the 20th of August. And those that are going to live on campus have to go through a testing protocol. And they're obviously have adjusted classes. We do have in-person classes, but the larger classes are not happening this year. They've actually created more sections for the class. And we all remember going to classes of freshman year and taking those various subjects, and there's 100, 200, 300 people in a class. Those aren't happening, but they are using the larger rooms to, you know, create social distancing. And plus, you know, the required masking, you know, that students will have going to from and being in class. So the combination is to try to create a safe environment. But there's still a good number of classes that will be offered online. And, you know, from one student athlete to the other, depending on what they're pursuing academically, they may have a combination of both. And then we'll continue to test our student athletes. As you know, we were one of the few that came back later than most. We've only been on campus now 2 weeks. We've actually had 3 tests so far, all the PCR type of test. And so I want to say this, you know, that right now our players are showing great discipline. It's one thing to be able to protect them when they're in our facilities or at practices and so on, but it's also required for them to be disciplined where they are outside of the building. In the last 2 weeks when we've done our surveillance testing, we've had 0 positives. But you know the statement about that. We're only as good as our next test. So we have to try to keep our fingers crossed that that trend keeps going.
Oklahoma Athletic Director Joe Castiglione with us here on Golic and Wingo. Do you have an idea, and I know you said you've modeled a lot of things, if the season were going to start tomorrow, do you guys have an ideal testing protocol that you would have going into the season of football play as far as frequency in this?
In addition to the daily checks that we have for student athletes coming in our buildings, we are planning a test the week of a game, 72 hours before the game, which allows the ability for the test not only to be taken but processed. And we're watching what's taking place. As I mentioned earlier, there are some challenges in some places because of the surge, where results aren't as readily available as they were maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. But perhaps by the time we get to the season, we'll see improvement in those areas, and the testing results will typically come back in a 24-hour period. And then that allows not only for us to identify those who might have tested positive, but to implement contact tracing. And so the combination of the two is what we're trying to work with and understand, because both will have an impact on the number of players we have available for the game itself.
Golic and Wingo brought to you by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. Joe, last one here. Your coach, Lincoln Riley, has been one of the most outspoken coaches on being cautious with this, bringing student-athletes back later in the summer as a part of this process, and mentioned the other day keeping the option of a spring football season on the table. I'm just curious at this point, as you guys said, you've kept an open mind, but how much is that being discussed? How much planning is going into what could potentially happen if football's moved to the spring?
More now, Mike. We actually started talking about spring football back in early April, and I know people's heads spun around almost off their shoulders because that seemed way too early to be talking about spring football. But, you know, we're just trying to be diligent at creating all the options. I know it's not, and Coach Riley knows it's not the first option. We want to get through evaluating whether we can have a football season this fall, whether it's 12 games, whether it's a shortened season with conference game only. But if we can't have success in either one of those two options, we feel strongly that spring football is, in fact, an option. It's maybe down the list a little bit, but it is an option, and it's doable. Having said that, we're very well aware and have our eyes wide open to other challenges that might come, such as, you know, we can say we're going to have spring football, plan it, schedule it, have it all organized logistically, and we're still operating around the circumstances of the virus, and you're coming out of, you know, what is typically a flu season. But there are issues in some schools with weather. We obviously have talked about the idea of players, knowing that we've moved it up to the spring, how many would still decide to play. But those I'm talking about that have professional aspirations and are in their final year of eligibility, and the idea of playing two seasons, you know, in the same calendar year. Mm-hmm. But we think probably it's a conference schedule only. So you're talking about 8 or 9 games, then maybe a conference championship, and then maybe a shortened postseason. Now, I know some bowl folks are going to want to have their opportunity for postseason games too, but I think those that maybe are in the hunt for a championship would continue on past maybe mid-May, but we feel like it's best to conclude by the end of May, no later than the 1st of June. So it's logistically possible, but not without its challenges.
Wow. Absolutely challenges in there, but it sounds like a lot of careful planning going into it on your part and the part of many others. Joe, we really appreciate the time and the insight this morning. Best of luck with everything. Hoping for all the best as we get closer to college football.
Thanks, Joe. Hope to see you this year.
Yeah, me too. And we were right with you. We're hoping for the best.
Absolutely. Joe Castiglione, Oklahoma's athletic director, with us here on Golic and Wingo. All right, coming up next, as we transition back to the pros, we're going to give you my top five list. Not top threes, not top fours, any of that junk. Top five players in 2020 who want to put a ring on it. The coffee just hit. Knuck if you buck is on, and it's time to list stuff. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Cover all your bases with Straight Talk Wireless. Get the same networks as big carriers. Only pay up to 50% less. Get the unlimited plan. 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. Only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com.
All right. This is, you got the list today. I think it's a pretty interesting list. I like it. And you're going five, and that's all you're doing is five. You're actually
five.
Sticking to the list.
This is actually a strict list, mostly because I'm very lazy in this. It's the top five players going into the 2020 season that still don't have a ring. Now, this is top five relative to who is still at the top of their game in this.
Right.
But also career longevity factors.
Yeah, I got to throw in
how long have you been good in this situation?
Right.
As well as accounting for positional importance on this one. All right. Well, how well are you actually influencing your team over the course of things? You feeling good about this, Dad? You ready?
I like the thought process of this list. I will let you know if I like your list.
Let's kick it off with number five.
Number five.
Zach Martin.
Oh, boy.
I couldn't help myself.
Right out of the gate.
I mean, listen, but again, if you're looking at this, a walk-in Hall of Famer, probably since he entered the league, the consensus, if not in the top two conversation, for the best at his position on America's team. Tell me how Zach Martin gets left off.
I'm just trying to say, so basically, you're basically saying the best lineman with a little bit of longevity that has a career path taking you to the Hall of Fame that doesn't have a ring.
Six-time Pro Bowler, four-time first-team All-Pro. Since he entered the league, just six false starts and five holding calls since he's entered the league. He is the best at what he does.
He is.
He is a future Hall of Famer, and he's been doing it long enough to not have a ring. Quentin Nelson would also have a claim in this, but again, the longevity for Jack
enough.
In all this. Also, future Hall of Famer Quentin Nelson. Well, call what it is.
But,
hey. All right, number four.
Number four.
Quintoris Lopez Jones. Julio Jones.
So I was wondering what wide receiver. I knew there'd be one there. And we always talk about the top ones like a Michael Thomas, a DeAndre Hopkins, and a Julio Jones. And I will give you out of that grouping the guy with the longevity and the guy with what he has done, how good he is. I would agree with this one, Julio Jones.
Don't sleep on that because you know what they say about wide receivers.
What's
they
that?
Go in runs. Number three.
Number three on the list. Stay with me.
Larry Fitzgerald. Got to throw L. Fitz.
No brainer. Absolute no-brainer. Again, not near the top of the receivers in the league right now.
No.
But again, walk-in Hall of Famer for what he has done in the league, I believe, without question.
One of five wideouts with at least 500 yards in each of the last eight seasons. Him, T.Y. Hilton, the aforementioned Julio Jones, Golden Tate, and Emmanuel Sanders. So still balling, even going late in all of this. Currently second all-time in receiving yards and sixth in receiving touchdowns going into year 17. Number two.
Number two.
Limping into this one, but you're going to see where I'm going. It's hard to go down the list of quarterbacks and actually find guys that aren't Super Bowl champions.
Well, exactly.
Phillip Rivers is on that
list. I mean, you can't name another one that's most likely in the Hall of Fame that doesn't have a ring, right? Especially in his class, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning. You got Aaron Rodgers. You got Drew Brees. Obviously, Tom Brady. So you're listing Patrick Mahomes. So you're listing the top quarterbacks who are either already in the NFL or Hall of Fame or going to be in the Hall of Fame or right on the trajectory for it.
I'll throw Russell Wilson in that list, too, as far as future Hall of Famers in that one, the
right.
job that he's
but
done.
But he
in
obviously
a lot of this.
Has a ring as well.
Has
so
a ring.
It's tough to find at that position anyone other than Phillip Rivers. I'm trying to really just go in my head.
And
really.
I think Phillip Rivers, because we've had the Hall of Fame discussion with him so much, obviously, Matt Ryan is another really good quarterback that lacks a ring, has an MVP
That's
season.
Very
his name.
True.
And Matthew Stafford is the other one I'll continue to champion for the Detroit Lions.
Okay.
In a lot of this.
I like the Phillip Rivers one, though. I'm with you.
And we'll get to number one for you right here.
Number one.
You could argue the best player in the NFL each and every year. He's got a legitimate claim to that stake. Aaron Donald.
Yeah. You know what? No matter how much we bicker about O-line and D-line, when it comes to talent and recognizing it, I know you understand where the top talent is. It's on the defensive line.
Over the past three seasons, Aaron Donald, amongst all players, first with 264 pass rush wins in that metric we track here at ESPN. Beat your man in 2.5 seconds. First with 120 pass rush wins against double teams over that time. First with 11 forced fumbles. All in all, an absolute force of nature. A guy who got close. We know that Rams team that got to play the Patriots
right.
in the ugliest Super Bowl known to mankind.
Sure was.
Aaron Donald, the best at what he does, still needs a ring
I
on.
I actually
it.
Like your list. Stunningly
Pretty
enough,
solid list.
Because a D lineman is number one.
J.J. Watt and others also receiving votes. Matt Ryan that we mentioned. But there is your top five. I'm sure no one will have a problem with that. As the NFL tries to clear a path for the 2020 season, our next guest is trying to clear a path to back-to-back MVPs. We'll get to that next on Golic and Wingo.